Dr. Pearson, welcome. Thanks for joining us today as we are celebrating Women's History Month.
Well, thank you. It's my honor to be here and sharing a little bit about being a woman in a leadership position, and hopefully we can inspire others to be part of women's history as well.
That is my hope, too. When I learned of your story a couple of weeks ago, I was very hopeful that I could snag you for an interview, because I heard just a couple of snippets of your life story, and I thought, wow, how impactful relating that story to not just young women, but all women listeners here in the Joplin area could be. So thank you again very much for joining us today. And if we could, if it's okay with you, we'll just kind of start off with, where were you born and in what kind of environment were you raised?
Okay, this one, I have to admit, I've not always been comfortable sharing this information. I've just recently, the past few years, about 5 years ago, I was able to begin sharing the poverty that I grew up in. I come from northeast Oklahoma. I went to high school at Jay. I actually lived in a small town called Tijuana. It was very rural, and had a single mom. I have three siblings, and a single parent was raising us. Grew up in poverty, on welfare. We are Native Americans. We received Native American commodities, and back then it was the way you went and picked up your food was pretty degrading. So you just grow up in a world of you're just not going to achieve. People don't expect much of you. Mm-hmm. And, and I was sharing recently with some students when the recruiters from the colleges came to Jay High School, I was not allowed to go because why would I go? It was just a waste of time because no one expected me to go to school. Pretty tough environment. And by the time, one thing I know about poverty is that you tend to live in a cycle of poverty. So I did what I thought I was supposed to do. And so by the time I was 17, I'm still in high school, but I have my first child. And by the time I'm 21, I have my second child. And on the same poverty cycle, welfare, food stamps, et cetera. Sure. The only way I was able to really get out of that was a friend from high school more or less made me realize this was my choice to be there. This wasn't something that was being done to me. I had a choice. And he said he would help me if I would just come to, I was in Wyoming at the time, 21, I'm in Wyoming. And because I'm pretty transient, moved around a lot. And he said, come to the University of Oklahoma. He would help me get into school. And he was true to his word. I packed up my kids in my little car and drove from Wyoming to Norman, Oklahoma. And he introduced me to people, and I started my college career.
So were you corresponding with this high school friend via telephone, social media? You had stayed in touch since high school?
Oh, my gosh. Back then, you had to actually write a letter and put a stamp on it. Delayed gratification, it might take 2 weeks to a month to get a response. I have always liked writing. Mm-hmm. I like words. I like reading. I think reading, my mom blessed us with library cards and making sure we did have books. Mm-hmm. And books were always an escape for me, my siblings. And so writing was an escape. And so I wrote to him. He was a journalism major at the University of Oklahoma, and that's kind of where I started. I started in journalism, the University of Oklahoma, but my younger son became very ill. I had to stop out, move back to Wyoming, and set out for about a year. And again, it was my mom. I'm a first-generation student, so no one in my family had been to college. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't expected.
Sure.
Just wasn't expected. And I have to growing up, when you come from poverty, you think a certain way, you do things a certain way, and you don't always receive the encouragement. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't understand, if you're a first generation and coming from poverty, you don't have a lot of the, yeah, you can do this, this is expected. You might even get the opposite, because you talk differently, you have different manners, social mm-hmm. graces, etiquette, because you learn that by being around other people. And so you become kind of an alien in your own family. And it's tough on first-generation students. So if I can say anything, it's look for people who can support you through that, because there will be some detractors.
And you mentioned somebody,
your own family members.
Right. Especially your family members. This encouragement and support coming from a friend, and I imagine there are a couple of different ingredients to a recipe of successfully breaking out of poverty. One of those, Doc, has got to be courage. You had the courage to pack up your kids in your little car and move hundreds of miles to take on higher education, which, like you said, you're a first generation post high school person in your family. That had to take a lot of courage.
When I reflect back, I don't think it was so much courage as, I tell people, I was just ignorant. I just didn't know what to expect. I had no idea how hard it was going to be. I didn't know any different. Mm-hmm. I will say, coming out of a poverty background and encountering a lot of obstacles, setbacks, you do get grit along the way. You do learn to be really determined. And you throw that in with not having a clue on what to expect or do, you just persevere. And I just pushed through it until I was done. I did go into communication, but realized, being a single parent, I would not be able to work the hours and have childcare. So got a teaching certification, and I taught high school English, journalism, Spanish. It's all language based. I love Wow. words and how people use words to communicate. So this is Women's History Month. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give a shout out to one of the people, and it was a television character actually, who inspired me. If as a little girl, if I, playing games, make believe this is who I am as an adult, it was Lieutenant Uhura from Star Trek.
Yes.
The chief communications officer. I loved her. She was beautiful. She was smart. And for the most part, she was the only woman who was in a leadership role on TV with a lot of very powerful men, if you think of Star Trek in that way. A woman of color, mm-hmm. and more or less without her, they wouldn't have been able to navigate that ship. And for me, she was a hero.
I can imagine that Nichelle Nichols inspired many women of multi-races, of white and women of color, brown, black, etc. Like you said, talk about a glass ceiling breaker and a trendsetter. That was her.
Yes. Wow. So she was one of my early role models. And I realize she's a television character, but that's who I wanted to be. And did not quite realize what communication meant. Again, if you're not coming from an educated background, communications takes all forms.
But that's fascinating that it was a TV character, but more so the actor herself.
Yes.
And her successes Absolutely. That inspired you. So how did that Absolutely. Translate then, Dr. Pearson, into your college days and as you achieved your teaching certification and were completing your undergrad? Did you start learning basically, yes, I can, and I'm worthy?
Mm, I will say I probably did not get that yes, I'm worthy until I became the president of a university. Hmm. That you're talking a late life moment for me. Mm-hmm. Because the type of background I came from, there's a lot of imposter syndrome. You know, at some point, you know, getting the bachelor's degree, it's like, they're going to figure out I'm not smart enough for this and they made a mistake. They'll come take it away. Well, I began, I was teaching in a district that required a master's degree to be tenured in that public school system. And you had to have it within 5 years of starting at that school district. And my principal said, you need to go get your master's. Mm-hmm. Well, I did not understand higher ed well enough at the time to know I could work and go to school at the same time. So I quit my job. I found the University of Arkansas because I am Native American at the time. It allowed me to go to school with in-state tuition. Mm-hmm. Moved my children. At this point, I have three children, single parent, wow. Three children. And we land in Fayetteville, and it was just remarkable. I was given a teaching assistantship, so I get to teach Comp 1, Comp 2, literature, intro to literature. Mm. And it helped, you know, I'm getting my classes. It helps cover the tuition. It was an amazing experience. I stayed for my doctorate. I have a doctor of philosophy in medieval British literature.
Oh my gosh.
Specifically,
that's fascinating.
Specifically apocalyptic literature. I mean, you really narrow down to the 13th century. Let me tell you what's going on. But I'm a generalist. Mm-hmm. I like it all. So began a faculty career teaching in Kentucky at mm-hmm. a private institution in Kentucky, and then came to William Woods in Fulton, Missouri. Mm-hmm. And I will say, when I was at William Woods, they had a woman president, Janae Barnett, the first woman president I had ever worked for, and she was a remarkable woman, tough. That woman was tough and simply told you how it was going to be.
Good.
And then the provost at William Woods. I was there 7 years. And the provost, Sherry McCarthy, an incredible mentor. She was very good. She modeled for me how to step up to the plate mm-hmm. and take on new experiences. And if I did not do something well privately, she would bring me in and say, let's talk about how this might have gone differently. And just really in a very professional, very caring way, mm-hmm. helped me grow and began offering me leadership positions, director of assessment, director of an honors program,
associate dean,
assistant vice presidency, mm-hmm. yes, associate dean, and
division chair for sciences and humanities.
I just stepped up and did whatever I could do.
That's phenomenal.
And learned. And this, you know, again, I love learning. And so just step into these different roles and learn as much as I can. From there, I realized I spent much of my career at that point in private education, somewhat selective institutions. So I wanted to try a public institution. I became an assistant vice president at East Central University in Ada, Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Public institutions are different. But again, I had good role models and I had people willing to mentor me along the way. Had a very good friend. She was the director of the library at East Central University, who had a long career in public education. And she helped me navigate, you know, public public law, state statutes, public policy, and work with representatives. There was a senator, Oklahoma Senator Susan Paddock, who was in Oklahoma politics. She, along with a woman named Billy Floyd, again, helped me navigate how to interact with politicians. I eventually became the president of East Troll University in Ada. I did that for 5 years and just kind of had this, I wasn't looking for a job, but Crowder College in Neosho had a presidency open. I'd not worked at a community college at any point in my career. And I said, I'm going to do that. I'm going to try that. Crowder College, one, community colleges, it is all about the community. I mean, that word means so much in the type of institution we are. The sense of place is really important. And so I have, it's been a learning curve. I've been here a year. So learning how to navigate the community aspect, because we are really focused on making sure that the men and women that come to Crowder College are here to grow the community. That's a little different from a university where you want to send them away.
Right.
They come from all over and you send them back. Community college is how do we help our community grow and prosper, every single member of our community. And we're in several communities. We're in Joplin, Nevada, Cassville, McDonald County, Webb City, and here in Neosho.
And while there are communities with different identities, some community identities do cross county and state lines. So are you kind of finding in this Southwest Missouri community or group of communities some of the same conditions that perhaps you grew up in or grew to know in Northeast Oklahoma?
Absolutely. Our students, many of our students do come from an impoverished background, have limited opportunities. They're from very rural areas, so they have limited access. And, you know, it's hard to believe in this world of technology, but we have students who just, they may not even have cell service on their phone because of where they live. And drugs, alcohol, I had all of that in my background. So when I'm talking with students, I know where they're coming from. I know those challenges. We have single parents who are trying to make it. You know, a lot of single mothers, I can really identify. The downside is, because I can identify, you don't get an excuse. You can push through and you can make this happen. You can get that degree. And I will, you know, one thing I tell people, Kevin, is that it doesn't change your life. It does change your life, but it's not just your life. It will change your children's lives for the better. It will change, as it did in my family, my entire family's life. My siblings have advanced degrees. My mother ended up with an RN career, retired from being an RN. What it can do is really amazing. So it breaks cycles. You just end up with better outcomes, health outcomes, happiness outcomes. Education can do quite a bit.
And beginning with your mother, instilling in you the value of reading and making sure that you had a library card and used it, then along with those other women you spoke of throughout your undergrad and graduate work and postgrad work, now you are in a position to be one of those women for someone who now, who was your age then. What a great opportunity.
There are moments you just never know who you're going to touch. So you just have to make sure you are out there 100% all the time for anyone you might be in contact with. And because you just don't know how you're going to touch someone's life. I'm going to share, I just reached out, there's a woman from Oklahoma, single mom. She had six children, older woman, found herself divorced. I met her when I became a president at ECU in Oklahoma. And she reached out recently and said, just want to touch base. I'm in my second year of law school. Where she came from and where she is today and how her children are benefiting. That's why I do what I do. That's why education is so important, because you just don't know who you're going to touch and how a life might be changed.
And in these opportunities to speak with these women, then are there specific messages or fundamental messages that you try to relate to them?
Be true to yourself. That, you know, go back to Shakespeare, to thine own self be true. I think women today have, actually, technology with the social media, in talking with particularly young women, but even some more mature women, the pressure of seeing and being, you know, we only put positive stuff out there on social media. So we assume everybody's life is so much better than ours. Well, it's not. It's just what they choose to post. So be true to who you are. If you're having a bad day, you're having a bad day. But you can't measure that against this fabulous, you know, cruise vacation somebody's just gone on, because you don't know everything it took that person to get to that point. Mm-hmm. You're only seeing this very small snippet. So I encourage women just to unplug from all of that and really pay attention to where they are in space and time in this moment, because we have so much good to offer.
So in celebrating Women's History Month, I was looking for, I used the words power women in the area to speak, and I'm discovering a common thread. And one of those common threads you just hit on very well, and I'm so grateful to you for that. And it is that in looking around at your peers as a woman, it looks like everybody else has it figured out, and you might feel like you don't. But the truth of the matter is they don't have it figured out any better than you do. Thank you for making that point.
That is absolutely correct.
Beautiful.
That is correct.
Because I can imagine that would be, can be very debilitating. If you think everyone else has it figured out, but you don't, it can slow you down or hold you back.
That is true. And I do think, you know, a lot of people, I don't want to say women aren't the only ones who have imposter syndrome, mm-hmm. but we do see it develop in young women, in girls, about the age of sixth grade, seventh grade. And then social media has only exacerbated that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the message is, you have talents, unique talents. We can't all be the same. One, we wouldn't be inventing all the things that have been invented over millennia that we take for granted today if we all thought the same. And, oh, that would be so boring if we were all the same. We got to bring the variety to it. So let those unique gifts come through. That's my word of encouragement.
And that's a really great point, and I'm glad you brought that one up. So to wrap up, Doc, I'm going to catch you off guard a little bit. I did this in speaking with my guest last week, and the question I want to pose to you, I will premise with, we all need somebody. We all feel a need for a significant other in our lives to, you know, encourage them, or they encourage us. You know, we all want the romance and the love. And I had a problem phrasing this last week too. But what I'm trying to get to is, as a young woman with a vision and trying to find her way through life, what advice would you have for that young girl who is either in a relationship or entering a relationship, and how does she stick to her guns?
You're talking to a person who has been married to three different times.
Perfect.
So you just don't put up with anything.
There we go.
That makes you uncomfortable or is, you know, puts you down in any way. We are worthy. Women are worthy of love, and love cannot hurt. And love cannot shame, and love cannot degrade. That is not love. That's not romance. It is simply feeding probably some low self-worth. So sticking to the guns, you know, there will be somebody. It might not be tomorrow. It might be next year before that somebody comes along, but they eventually do. I've met my husband. I've been happily married almost 25 years, and I wasn't looking. I'd already been in two pretty abusive relationships and said, I'm not doing that anymore, because I had made that point working on my master's degree that I am worth it. I need to take care of myself. I need to make sure my children grow up in a healthy relationship. And if that means just me, so be it. And he just walked out of the blue. You know, there he was. But at no point, can a relationship be painful, because then it is not good for you. And you need to step away. And it's tough. I get it.
Dr. Pearson, you said a mouthful there, and I am so grateful for you sharing that insight with us and our female listeners, because so many young women out there need to hear that. They need to hear that empowerment. They need to hear that they can do better, that they don't have to put up with crap.
Exactly. That's right.
So thank you so much for that. Thank you for your candor, and thank you for sharing some very intimate details with us, and all in the celebration of Women's History Month and empowering women. Any parting shots, Dr. Pearson?
Kevin, I just want to say thank you for allowing me to visit with you and talk a little bit about the challenges and the achievements that I've had over the years, and celebrate all the wonderful women in our lives in Women's History Month.
And congratulations to your appointment as president of Crowder College and completing your first year successfully. Perhaps in a couple of months we can touch base and get an update on how things are going for you.
Oh, I would love that. I love that very much.
Beautiful. Dr. Pearson, thank you so much.
All right. You have a good day.
You too.